This is the dedication of Sibia Batmalka, a woman that had an operation on her tongue for tongue cancer, and Baruch Hashem, they're able to transplant some tissue to restore her speech. But she's still in the hospital, and we hope that our learning should be for a refuah shleima, and she should be healthy and have all of her functions restored.
Amen. Amen.
And we are talking about the mitzvahs that the women had a special zuchus for, although they're lapped up the women's mitzvahs. Men have to do this as well. And that is Hadlakas Haneros, the union of Ner Shabbos, and the mitzvah of Hafreshes Chala. The third one, which is Nidah, has to be obviously left for another time. By the way, the remez of these three mitzvahs, Chala, Nidah, Hadlakas Haner, the Gemara spells out Chana. It's a remez that Chana has the chuyos that are mekusher to those three. First, it's important to remember that the mitzvah of Chala, at least in its original form, is a mitzvah d'oraisa. It's one of the 613 commandments of the Torah, as opposed to hadlakas ner shabbos, which is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. So we are dealing with a d'oraisa versus a d'rabbanan. However, according to most opinions, chala b'zman hazeh, when most of the Jews do not yet live in Israel, is d'rabbanan as well. But in its conception, chala was a d'oraisa. So that's one point. Not quite yet. We're approaching. It's not yet 50%. I think it's going to be very, very soon. Well, the problem is this. See, the problem basically is every time we approach the 50%, we discover, 30 million in Nigeria that might be Jewish. It's not clear how you count it, because Baruch Hashem, we are discovering more and more people who might be Jewish. But also, I oversimplified a little bit. In order for challah to be d'oraisa, it's not only that most Jews have to be in Israel, but it also means that we've divided the land according to the tribes, and that's what happens, I guess, the tribal division.
Most Jews are living in Israel, we're not
going to
be divided.
No, that's what I'm saying. There are two conditions. Most Jews live in Israel. In other words, in order for challah to be d'oraisa, d'rabbanan it is, but to be d'oraisa, you need most Jews in Israel and the tribal division of the land, which will not be until Yimar Tamashiach, essentially.
So the whole thing of Shemitah, like by next Shemitah, we may have the majority of Jews.
Yeah, that's an oversimplification. It's not d'oraisa, yeah. It's not d'oraisa.
It won't be d'oraisa even if 60% of the Jews are living in Israel?
Even if 100%, it would not be d'oraisa.
Because to be d'oraisa, Mashiach has to come?
No, to be d'oraisa, you need a tribal division. Now, it happens to be, we're not going to have the tribal until Mashiach comes. In other words, it's not directly totally on Mashiach, it's totally on tribal division. But the next tribal division we're going to have will be after Mashiach comes. So it will not be d'oraisa.
So all those mitzvahs that we were just waiting to have the majority of
not all of them, but the three that are totally on this are Chala, Shemitah, and Yovel.
And
Yovel. Chala, Shemitah, and Yovel require the presence of most Jews. D'oraisa. Require the presence of most Jews in the land of Israel, plus the tribal division. Truma may not require that. That's a big machlokas. But whether Truma today is D'oraisa or not, that's a machlokas. But Chala, Shemitah is clearly D'rabbanan today, and Yovel, we don't even keep it up. Yovel is not even D'rabbanan. Like, nobody keeps the Jubilee year today.
But,
yeah.
I mean, how can we be a tribal division when, like, 10 of the tribes, right now 10 of the tribes are lost.
That's correct.
So this is the
presupposition that one of the things Mashiach will do is to bring back the remnants of the Esteres HaShvatim. Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, Mashiach will know. Mashiach will know, and then we'll know. By the way, to add to your confusion, when somebody just remarked, we know where the land is, it's going to be a different division. It's not. In other words, in the book of Yoshua, we are given tribal boundaries. And even if we could identify that, Liyasid Lavo, that's not the Chalukah Torah. At the end of the book of Yechezkel, there is a different Chalukah Torah. So it's not going to correspond. It'll be a series of interesting, like, horizontal strips. Imagine Eretz Yisrael north-south, and you're going to have like 12 horizontal strips, and Yerushalayim will be the horizontal strip called Truma HaKodesh. It's a different chalukah. It's not going to, it'll be very symmetrical, very just these 12 lines.
So I don't have to live in my apartment anymore?
Well, you can buy things, of course, but then you only own it until Yovel. You know, so you're not going to have permanent ownership. You could move around freely, but yeah, everything's going to be 50-year sales.
Huh.
Or whatever.
Right?
Yerushalayim is straddles Yehuda and Binyamin. Yeah, but it'll be a little different than Yerushalayim is a separate division, the Mikdash, and it'll go back there.
Where's Levi?
Well, Levi, just like Levi, Levi will have a strip, but it'll be around Yerushalayim.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a different division. So we'll need the whole. That's why I think that, you know, people say what type of professions are going to be relevant when Mashiach comes. The truth is, we're going to need lawyers when Mashiach comes.
Really?
Not the secular law, but, you know, you got to figure out who owns this land, who owns that land. It's a complicated surveying process in terms of figuring out, you know, land surveyors and lawyers will be needed to clarify ownership of land. Now, so that's one point, that there is a Doraisa versus a Durabanan element. Again, halachically, you have to be aware of it. You'll ask Akasha, which is really Akasha on a million things. If a mitzvah is only rabbinic, how can I make the bracha asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu lahadlik ner shel Shabbos or Chanukah or Megillah? And the answer is, as the Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos and as the Rambam articulates, that since HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Parshas Shoftim commands us to obey the takanas of our Chachamim, that's lo safsur mikosh yagidu l'cha, so every rabbinic commandment you fulfill, you're fulfilling a Torah commandment. Parsha Shoftim in Book of Devarim, Perek Yud Zayin. I don't remember the other pasuk. That's Lo Sasur. Very important to say. The Rambam explains Lo Sasur Mikol Asher Yagidu Lecha Yamin Usmol is a Torah commandment to obey the Takanos and the Gezeros of our Chachamim. So every time, so when people say, "Oh, it's only Rabbanim." Not true. If I transgress a rabbanim, I am violating a mitzvah in the Torah.
Is it only formal takanonim, or is it like, you know, rabbi decreeing something?
Yeah. So this is a little bit of a misuse of the term. Sometimes you'll see something about the Badatz, you know, says the Eidei Haredi said you're not allowed to have internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying you should have internet. So it'll say, and anyone that has an internet is over on Lo Sasur.
Right.
That's a bit of an overspeak. I mean, basically, Lo Sasur refers to the Takanos and Gezeros of the Chachamim that are binding on the Jewish people.
Okay.
An individual rabbi tells you something, so you should follow him because he's your rabbi and he's your posek, but you're not transgressing the Doraisa of Lo Sasur. Lo Sasur has a specific...
It refers to the
greater
assembly, right?
Sanhedrin. Yeah. Sanhedrin of 70, of 71.
Right.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
So without a Sanhedrin, there cannot be any...
That's a surprisingly hard question to answer. The Rambam is mashma in his Hatzama that there can be a replacement for the Sanhedrin if the Jewish people as a whole have accepted something as their leadership.
Yeah.
Now, good luck on that today.
Yeah.
But in the time of the Gaonim, there was that concept, you know, that the Gaonim of Babel were accepted.
Ah.
So the Rambam is mashma that is nichlal in Lo Sasur. But short of that, it's not Lo Sasur. Short of this universal idea of religious Jews. Obviously, I don't mean all Jews, because we have Jews who don't believe in Torah, but Jews who are believers of Torah, there is a notion of you can kind of create your Sanhedrin. We accept them as the authorities, and therefore, you know.
But there's like a few years ago, 10 years ago or so, there was an effort to make a new Sanhedrin.
Yeah, it's still hanging around, yeah.
But
nobody
doesn't have any authority. No, there's no authority.
I mean, just because somebody, you essentially have, you know, 1,000 people who want to make a Sanhedrin, you know, that doesn't mean anything. Okay. So that's point number one, just to be aware of Doraisa Durabanan. Point number two, which I already said, but I'll repeat it, is these are not women's mitzvahs in a strict sense. The mitzvah of challah, Doraisa Durabanan, applies to a man who's making dough, and the mitzvah of Shabbos candles applies to a man as well. These are not women's mitzvahs, but it cannot be denied that women do have a special relationship to these mitzvahs. That's why, you know, if you're a married couple, It's preferable that a woman should light as opposed to a man, although the man must light if the woman doesn't.
If a man's not married, he must light?
Absolutely. 1,000%. Now, if he's in the yeshiva, we'll talk about it. He could be yotzei with other people, but he is mechuyav to light. Unless he's living with his parents. If he's living with his parents could be motzei. But if he's living by himself, a single man who's working, living by himself, must light Ner Shabbos with a bracha. No question. So these are not only women's mitzvahs. These are chiyuvim on everybody. But Chazal give us special associations with women. Some of it may sound negative on one level. And that is, it's connected to the chet of the Yetzer Hara. And it says, because woman was machshel Adam in Eden from the fruit of the Yetzer Hara and brought darkness into the world, extinguishing the light of the world, which is referring to the eternity of the neshama, eternal life. So the way you're masakein the extinguishing of the light of the world is by creating light. It's a tikkun. Similarly, Adam HaRishon is described as the challah of the world. It's like Hashem kneaded, right? Hashem took mud, took dirt, mixed it with water, and Adam is the challah that he took from the dough. Challah is the choice itself.
Wow.
So once again, Chava was involved in destroying that challah, so the tikkun is challah. This is a much deeper thought, but once again, both challah and Ner Shabbos are considered to be spiritual rectification of death that was brought into the world, which gets elevated by light and by the hafrasha of giving things to Hashem, which is challah. So, in a sense, they are women's mitzvahs, but one has to remember that the men will have the absolute chiyuv to do these mitzvahs if a woman is not doing it for them. Man must light Shabbos candles. Okay. So there's a lot to talk about. Let me just talk a little bit about challah first, then I'll talk about Ner Shabbos, and I'm going to talk about just some very basic shailos. And of course, if you are bakers, undoubtedly, you know most of this. So I apologize if I'm telling you things that you know. Challah is different than truma and other things because challah is a mitzvah that takes effect when you make a dough. Unlike truma and maser, that you take off as soon as something is harvested. Chava depends on making an Isa. And Isa is a dough, and the Isa has to be comprised of one or all of the five species of grain, which is of course wheat, barley, rye, oats, spelt. If you're making rice bread or cornbread, there is no chi of chava unless there is some wheat or rye mixed in. Which usually there is, but if you're making a, I don't even know if you can make a pure cornbread, but if you're making a pure cornbread, there is no challah involved. And what is the shi'ur? What is the amount of the flour? That's mechayev you in challah. So the Torah itself tells you the amount. It says, reishis ariso seichem, the first of your dough you shall give to the Kohen. And ariso seichem is defined by Chazal as the amount of man that Hashem gave you every day in the desert, which means the definition, that is your dough, what Hashem gave you. So the definition of the Shir Challah is simply the amount that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us in man every single day. And the Torah itself tells you what that is. It is a tenth of an ephah. So this ambiguity is only because how do we translate it into modern measurements? But we know b'diyuk, what the Torah says is the definition of the shiur, a tenth of an ephah. Now a tenth of an ephah in the Gemara comes out to 43 and a fraction of an egg, the volume of eggs. Right? In other words, this is often how we measure quantities, like an egg with a shell has a certain volume of water that it would displace, so multiply that by 43 and a fifth edge, that's the Shir Challah. Now, because there are many, many machloksim if our eggs today are smaller or not, because it's based on some contradictions in numbers, this is where you get the well-known number that I'm sure you've heard of, and that is that if you're making a dough of 5 pounds of flour or more, that is 1,100% chayav and challah. Yeah.
How many?
Your chayav and challah with a bracha, 2.5 until 5 is chala without a bracha, because that's the uncertainty.
Pounds.
Yeah, I mean, I use pounds.
No,
I used it. Okay. Yeah. So you have to correct me. I'm with American. Actually, I think the U.S. is like the last country in the world. I think even England uses the metric system, right? I think.
Yes,
the U.S. We Americans are very, very inflexible. We just can't. We can't learn new ways or whatever.
No, it costs money.
Yeah. No, I'm saying it on myself too. You know, I got to stick with the old ways.
You call it
Okay. But that's why the reason why there's an uncertainty is that there are some opinions that say, in other words, the volume of our eggs, of our averages, our medium eggs, if you translate it into the weight, turns into 2.5 pounds. However, since the Night of Yehuda, Great Pose, proved that our eggs are 50% smaller, although empirically that's a questionable proposition, he says the volume of our 43 eggs is really only the volume of 21 and a fraction, and therefore you have to double it. So because we're not sure, so like everything else, we're machmir on the mitzvah, but we don't make a bracha until we know for sure, because saying a bracha in vain is an aveira. So that's why you got separate without a bracha in the area of uncertainty, because maybe it's a bracha in vain, but when you reach the maximal shear, make a bracha. By the way, that's why by Pesach too, it's the same issue, by everything, by Kesaris, everything depends on this question. That's why you'll see sometimes b'chatchila, you should eat double the amount of matzah, but the yevet, half. It's all based on whether you follow this neida, the Yehuda's psak, that the eggs, which also determine Kesaris, are only half the size, and therefore every shear has to be doubled.
I heard that, like, I got so many strange answers about if it's like white flour, it's this whole thing of, you know, 2 kilo. But if it's like a little bit of wheat, spelt, oat, rye, it's different. It's a different measurement, and you got to put it in this kind of thing and measure it that way and take, you know, do you feel like it's...
No, you go with the straight shiur. The only problem you'll have is when you make hybrids with rice flour or potatoes flour or corn, then you have to reconstitute. But if you're only working with the five species, they're all the same. We follow all the same for that. The truth is, even with rice flour, the truth is, it's a complicated halacha. According to the Mishnah, it's interesting that if you mix rice flour and wheat flour, even if you only have a little bit of wheat flour, if there's enough wheat flour that you'll be able to taste wheat in the mixture, then you count even the rice towards the shir challah. So let's say I'm making 2.5 pounds of a mixture of rice and wheat, and the rice is 3/4 of the mixture. According to the Mishnah and the Talmud Yerushalmi, you would actually take off challah and the whole thing, but the question is that only for rice, or is that also for corn? You know, so I would tell you to, if you're making those types of breads, don't make less than 2.5 pounds, and because there's going to be a big shaila how you compute challah once you mix it with things beyond the chameshas mine doga. Okay, in fact, some have even suggested, I don't want to be mafalpal too much, I'll pee this you show me, that rice acquires the status of wheat, the wheat gives taste. They suggested that as a possible solution for people with celiac disease. And that is, in the celiac disease, people cannot take the gluten of wheat in large quantities, even in small quantities. But it's suggested, why don't you make a combination, small amount of wheat mixed with rice flour, and even for Ashkenazim, that rice is kidneyos, but the argument is for a mitzvah of matzah, you know, you'd be allowed to eat kidneyos. And if you combine a little bit of wheat with rice, since the Yerushalmi says the rice acquires the status of the wheat for challah, it may acquire the status of the wheat for matzah as well. So it's been suggested that a rice matzah would be kosher if there's a little bit of wheat. Now this is a radical suggestion. I think most poskim don't like it, but this has been suggested as a possible celiac disease. Now, the standard response to celiac disease is oat matzah. So you might say, what's wrong with oat matzah? I mean, the oat matzah seems better. So the reason is that there is actually some machlokas, although it's a tiny machlokas, whether shibola shuah in the Talmud is oat. We always say oats is one of the five species, but there are some Rishonim who say not, and therefore the argument is better to have rice and wheat than oat matzah, because oat might not be amazing. Okay. But again, I will tell you not to worry about that at all, because the Haskama of 99% of poskim is that oats are chameshes mina zaza.
If you have a rice,
the challah,
or with a little bit of wheat, or rice matzah, with the bracha on the eating of it,
for sure, that's for sure. That is absolutely for sure. Whether you took off challah or not, if there's wheat in the mixture, it'll be hamotzi. So that's correct. People have to know that. So cornbread and all that stuff is usually going to be hamotzi.
In cake, and you don't make it, doesn't become
hamotzi. Well, that's a separate issue. The reason why, I mean, a cake might be 100% wheat flour, but that's different. That's because that's cake. In other words, bread and cake are halachically different. What makes them different? Well, that's an interesting question, but it's connected to the sugar, the flavorings, Chazal differentiated between grain products that you eat as a staple and grain products that are primarily dessert type food. So when things get very, very, very sweet, they cross over the line from bread to cake. But on the other hand, when you're making rice bread, if it's not to be eaten as cake, if you eat it with a fat sandwich and the like, you know, then it's we should probably give a share of that McDonald's bread and cake, and that's
okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about that eventually. Pizza.
I have a question about the taking of
olive. Okay, so I'm going in order. Okay. So the first thing you need to know is how large the dough, so we all know that. Now, second point. When you separate challah, what goes on? So in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the challah would be separated and you would give it to a kohen. A challah is something, right? Challah is not, challah bread, that's just, challah is what you give to the kohen. You give challah to the kohen. Bizman hazeh, we do not give challah to a kohen. And the reason we do not give challah to a kohen is challah can only be eaten if you are ritually tahor. Today, nobody is tahor, because we've all come in contact with the dead, and even Kohanim who are not allowed to go into cemeteries. But if I was in a cemetery and I shake a Kohen's hand, he's not doing an Aveira, but he does become Tameh. He's not doing an Aveira because he didn't come in direct contact, but he is Tameh. And you can't eat Challah when you're Tameh. That's why we don't give Truma to a Kohen either. And the only way you can become Tohar is with the ashes of the Parah Aduma. We don't have that either. Memela Bizman Hazeh, we don't give challah to a kohen. Now, because of that basic distinction, the amount of challah you separate is very different. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when we gave challah to a kohen, there was a minimum size that you separated. You gave 1/24th of your dough to a kohen. You'd have to figure out. 1/24th of the bread or the dough would be given to the kohen, because that was a significant nesina. If you were a baker whose parnasa depended on it, Chazal gave you a break, 1/48. Half, they gave you a break. Bizman hazeh, since our challah will not be given to a kohen, and in fact our challah is burnt, Chazal didn't want there to be bal tashchis, to separate a large amount of bread and burn it. So the ikar hadin is mashehu. The ikar hadin is you can take off a crumb. The Ramah brings, however, and you are Yotzer, the Ramah brings, it is minhag that you take off the size of an olive, a kezayis. It's just the size of a regular olive and the like. But that's a minute. I want to point out, in other words, min haTorah, when you gave it to a Kohen, 1/24th, or baker, 1/48th. After Kohanim or Tameh, mashahu, minhag. Now, the minhag is that because the challah is tameh, because I'm tameh, whoever's making the dough, you're tameh, you make the challah tameh, so the challah is tameh and the kohen is tameh, but the challah is tameh too. So challah that's tameh is burnt. Even bizman hamikdash, if the challah got tameh, you'd burn it. Since all of our challah is tameh, the kezayis we separate, we burn, and since it is forbidden to eat, you have to burn it in a way that it doesn't trafe up your other food. Right? That's the awareness. So, in other words, if I were to burn my challah next to my chicken soup or whatever it would be, you know, you'd have a little bit of a problem because the challah is something that's forbidden for you to eat. It's kadosh. So that's why you burn it in the oven when nothing else is cooking. Different people have different ways of doing it. Some wrap it up in aluminum foil. It's a little hard to get it totally charred. Others will actually, you can actually take a match or a little flame and char it, and you burn it until it turns into carbon. It's carbonized. Like you'd be burning a piece of chametz before Pesach. You wait until it ashes and the like.
The whole thing has to be totally
charred? Well, the shear is, that is best. It is best to do that. Now, that's hard to do in the oven itself.
I burn it on top of the stove.
Oh, the top of the stove is good also. That's perfectly good also. Technically, it's good enough if it is so charred on the outside that a dog would not eat it. So at that point, that's considered to be good. Yeah.
Is it okay? I'm
trying
to think
You can do that as well. It is considered to be better to burn it because somebody might find, a hungry man might find the challah and eat it. But you're correct. If you think about it, this is actually what we do. I don't know if you've had occasion to take off truma and miser. Because you buy the kashkachos usually. But the truma, that's actually what we do. When we separate truma, we double wrap it in plastic and throw it away. That's a good question. Why by challah? I think the difference is a very pragmatic difference, and that is truma tended to be separated in the field where you didn't have a fire, so the custom got you threw it away. Challah, you're in the kitchen. You're right. Really, there is no difference. But the minhag became to burn challah because you're in the kitchen anyway. But you're right. You can't throw it away. Double wrap it in plastic because it is kadosh, so it shouldn't be directly mixed with your
kadosh.
The answer is it's tamei that is kadosh, meaning to say that which was separated as challah is holy, but it can't be eaten because it became tamei. But that's not a contradiction. Now, let me just explain a very interesting difference here. You know, those of you who remember chutz la'aretz, the olden days, know that we separate challah in chutz la'aretz as well. Right? If you're making it, you're making chutz la'aretz as well, and you follow more or less the same procedure. But there's a very, very interesting difference between challah in chutz la'aretz and challah in Eretz Yisrael. And that is for Shabbos. The halacha is, until you separate challah, you're not allowed to eat the dough. Let's say I forgot to separate challah and I baked my bread, so I separate after my baking. And if in the middle of the meal I remember that I didn't separate challah, I got to stop eating bread, and I even have to spit out what's in my mouth, and I separate challah then, okay? You have to do that. Now, the problem is this. It is forbidden to separate challah, even if you're not going to burn it. It's forbidden to separate challah on Shabbos and Yom Tov.
Boer?
No, it's not boer. It's an issue of Rabbanim because since it's mesaken, since it rectifies the bread, it resembles fixing a vessel. It resembles makor b'chagos. It's a Rabbanim. You don't separate challah on Shabbos and Yom Tov. I'm sorry. Yom Tov, I stand corrected. On Yom Tov, you can if you made the dough on Yom Tov. If you're making the dough on Yom Tov, you can, but if it's a pre-existing dough on Shabbos, you cannot. Now, here's the problem. What if I forgot to separate challah from my bread, and now it's Shabbos? What do I do? So in Chutz La'aretz, this is one of the few advantages of Chutz La'aretz. In Chutz La'aretz, you're given a leniency. You can eat your bread and just leave over a little piece that after Shabbos you will proclaim as challah. You don't proclaim it as challah on Shabbos, but you leave it over and you can eat and leave over that piece. In Eretz Yisrael, you cannot. In Eretz Yisrael, it is forbidden to eat the bread until you declare that piece is challah, which you cannot do on Shabbos. So in Eretz Yisrael, you must go to your neighbor and say, do you have any bread I can borrow? Okay? So that is actually an important...
First question is, here in Israel, most of my clothes on a wholesale level
are taken
away and given to the zoo.
Yes.
The question is, could that be done also with challah? And the second question is, what would happen on Erev Pesach if it was forgotten to take challah from the matzah?
Yep.
And you have a really strong mitzvah on the Leil HaSeder to eat matzah. What are you going to do?
Those are two good questions, two very different questions, but let me take the first question first. The first question is, you are correct that trumos can be given to either a kohen, but if the kohen is tameh, he can't eat it, or you could feed it to the animal of a kohen. So now, an animal of a kohen doesn't have to be tameh or tohar, that makes no difference. In fact, animals technically do not contract trumos. So they do feed, some people do feed truma to zoo animals that are given in ownership to a kohen. So some kohen like owns the elephant or whatever it is. It doesn't work with challah for the following reason. The halacha that you can give holy food to animals only applies when it's not edible for humans. So I can give the raw wheat of truma to an animal because raw wheat or raw grain is not suitable for a human being. But since challah, you've already made a dough, you've already made a bread, it is edible for a human being. Well, you have to be mine. It's not so. Even then, if it's something that's generally fed, if it's generally part of an animal's diet, you could be lenient. In other words, if you feed an animal carrots, raw carrots, so that's called animal food. But bread is definitionally not animal food. So bread that is human food cannot be fed to an animal. Now, with respect to your second question, you're asking the question, gee, if I would be confronted with a chiyuv d'oraisa of eating matzah, Leil Seder, and I had this issur d'rabbanan of taking off challah, so your question is, should the issur d'rabbanan be set aside in order to enable me to fulfill a mitzvah d'oraisa? That's an excellent question. If you truly were in a trap where you're on a desert island and there's nobody you could borrow matzah from, you are correct. But if you can go to the neighbor and get matzah, you have to. In other words, only if it's blessed for Eva do you have such a. But you are correct. That's a good example of rabbinic isurim sometimes being set aside in order to allow you to keep a mitzvah. A mitzvah d'oraisa.
I put all of the challah that I take in the freezer, and then I bring it to Pesach and burn it. Is that okay?
Well, it is okay because once again, as long as you separate the challah, your bread is okay. But I would think, because of zerizim makdim and mitzvot, meaning to say, when you do a mitzvah, you try to do it as quickly as possible. It probably is better to just do the mitzvah of disposing of it every week as opposed to saving it up. But in terms of being allowed to eat your bread, yeah, 100%. As soon as I separate, I'm allowed to eat my bread even before I burn the challah.
I was told that when you take the challah and you hand a little ball, you can flatten it so that it burns.
Sure. Okay. Whatever way is best. Yeah. Yeah, the question is, can you dispose of the challah by rendering it unfit to eat chemically, like pouring, cleaning a detergent or something? Yeah, you can do that too. That's not worse than throwing it away. That's better than throwing it away, actually, because there's no chashash. Somebody will do it. It doesn't have, as I say, it doesn't have to be. The minhag is to burn it. But any type of disposition is okay. Yeah.
Is there something about after you take the challah, you have to make it right away? I thought others wasn't allowed to store dough in the freezer for another time, and then you had to make it right away. You bake it and it was right away. Is there anything about that?
Storing the dough after you separate challah?
Yes, after you separate challah.
No, that's okay. You can store it. You don't have to bake it. As long as your kavana is to make it, you don't have to bake it right away. Yeah. The only problem is storing the challah that you separated. Now let me just mention a few other things, and that is the chiyuv of challah is a pretty large quantity. Actually, most people who bake bread don't necessarily have that large a quantity. Although with bread makers you can put in a whole bunch of stuff. But let me point out that the chiyuv of challah with these amounts does not only apply to bread dough, but it even applies to things that you'd make mizonos on. For example, batters, cake batters, cookie batters, are actually chayav and challah if, of course, you're making a huge quantity. Now, of course, five pounds of flour is like, you know, whatever it is, 1,000 cookies, I don't know how much it is. But keep in mind that challah is not taloi on hamotzi. Challah will even include borei, mine, mizonos, even for pies and cakes. It is shayach for there to be challah, but the one condition is it must be a baked product as opposed to a fried product. So when you're making, you make donuts, you make your own donuts or whatever it is, or blintzes, if you make it by frying, you know, it depends how you make it. So the chiluk is not between bread and cake. The chiluk is between baked and fried. But any baked product, baked meaning dry yeast.
You're using 2 kilo flour to bake anything.
Yep, got to separate challah. So a lot of people make a mistake. They think it's totally on bread. It is not totally on bread. It's totally on baking versus frying or boiling. So noodles, even if you're making spaghetti or pasta, even if you know you're gonna, you know, you have 2 kilos, you don't have to separate challah from it.
Because
you're boiling. Right. It's boiling, yeah.
So my question is, when you take all this flour, the right amount, and you make a dough, so that you take power from. But what if you make like, I don't know what you mean, do that.
It's a batter. It's a batter. Right. So we paskin that even with batters, that's called blila rakah, soft, liquidy batter, you take off challah. Now, even if you're making a lot of small doughs, right, the halacha is if you put them in a single tray that has a little bit of a wall, not totally flat, but has a little bit of a rim, that's mitzaris them, etc. And then it's nayeg that, you know, you cover it up with a towel to make them more connected, then you take off challah on all of them and the like. Now, let me warn you about one thing. I'm not sure, again, I'm not a baker, and my wife is not a big baker, so I don't know if anyone ever does this, but I'll tell you a very interesting rule of the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says you have to be very careful when you make a cake not to use fruit juice unless you've included some water in it as well. That to knead your mizonos with pure fruit juice creates a very difficult halachic problem. Now, I'm not sure if anyone does this at all.
I do.
Just fruit juice? Okay, let me explain the problem. It's a complicated problem, but it's a very interesting problem. The problem is the following. You're not allowed to burn challah that is tahor. You're only allowed to burn challah that's tameh. Now, of course, I'm tameh, so anything I touch becomes tameh, right? That's fine. But here's the thing. In order for a foodstuff to become tameh, it must have come in contact at some point in its life with one of 7 liquids, water, milk, and the like.
You're talking about the
2 kilos. Yeah, 2 kilos.
No,
I understand. Now, here is the problem. The problem is water is one of the mashkin that enables something to be makabel summa. Pure fruit juice does not. So it turns out that if I have a mizonos product that doesn't contain any water, it technically is incapable of becoming tameh when I touch it. So when I separate challah, the challah is still tahor. If the challah is still tahor, there's an issue to arise to burn it. So the Shulchan Aruch says, we want you to specifically use a little bit of water in your product because we want the challah to become tameh, because then you'll be allowed to dispose of it. Tahor challah is a very bad dilemma, is my understanding, because here's the problem. So here's the problem. If I have tahor challah, but no kohen is tahor, that's a real dilemma, because I can't get rid of the challah, but I can't give it to a kohen either, because he's tameh. So I got to keep it in my kitchen, like forever and ever and ever. So the Shulchan Aruch recommends that since there's no kohen who's tahor to eat challah, you have to make your dough in such a way that it becomes tameh. I don't know if it's a realistic problem or not.
How much water would you have to add?
Even a mashu of water.
Now, if the hands are wet, when the hands are wet,
well, Well, the shear is this. There is a shear. It's a very quantifiable shear. The shear is there enough moisture on your hands that when you touch the dough, it could make something else wet if it were touched right there. Now, let me point out, I think practically this may not be such a problem for the following reason. In modern processing, most flour was washed in water. In fact, that's why flour is chametz. So most of the time, the flour has already come in contact with water, if it's bleached flour. If it's totally whole wheat, it's not crisp. But otherwise, flour wouldn't be chametz. Why can't I buy flour during Pesach? Flour is not chametz. The answer is, we assume
how
that...
How do they make matzah
then? Huh?
Well,
that's special. Well, I'm saying, normal flour, no. If they wash the flour that it doesn't get wet until they make the matzah, that's how they make matzah.
But you said they wash the flour.
Not for matzah. But I'm saying normal commercial flour, even with the hechsher, especially because of insects and the like, is washed. So if that's so, the Shulchan Aruch problem wouldn't be a problem today because the flour has already come in contact with some water, even if you're mixing it with features. Again, I'm mentioning this as a theoretical problem. It probably is not a real problem. Yeah.
Probably a very dumb question. That last name. I mean, I never knew this. So it's very possible that at some point I may be using 5 pounds of flour to make a whole bunch of cakes.
Right.
Okay? Well, cookies, not cookies, probably, but whatever. So here's the dumb part of the question. I mean, you can't take challah from liquid, I mean, from a bag. So can you?
You can. You can take it from the batter. What you do is, of course, how you dispose of it is a little different.
How do you do it?
You take a spoonful,
yeah,
put it in a cup, and then for a batter, the easiest thing would be to double wrap it and then throw it away.
And you say the bracha?
Yeah. You say the bracha on the challah, and you say harei zu challah. By the way, it's very important. The word harei zu challah or something like that in English or whatever language you speak, it's very important because it doesn't become challah, and that means your dough is not permitted to eat until you declare those words. No. You say the bracha, then you take it, and then you say.
That's correct.
Now, let me just mention a few halachas that you need to know, and again, I'm sure you've heard these over the. Oh, I'm sorry.
You get a lot of shear in the floor. Is there a guideline as to when you should be mixing with the
what?
In terms of quantity?
Yeah.
He's saying if you hear many different shiurim, you mean sizes of dough?
Yeah,
weight. Yeah, when you should be machmir, when you should be mekel. You know, there's no particular guideline. I think Rabbanan b'zmanazah, I think you follow the pipes that you normally follow. You know, I don't think you have to have a specific different approach to this area. Let me just mention something that's very, very important. Very, very important. And that is, sometimes you can have a dough which there was no obligation for challah, and you didn't have to separate challah. But because of the way it's stored or put away later, it might become this chayev and challah later. The example the Gemara gives is follows. Let's say I bake one little loaf of bread. No chiyuv of challah. And then I bake the next day another one, right? So over time I baked, let's say, 20 loaves, which is more than the 2.5 or the 5 kilos of flour. I then put all of those loaves in a box, let's say. Well, the Gemara says this is called siruf sal. Siruf sal means they're in one big basket, siruf. They all become combined. And now I am mechuyav to separate challah. Now the question becomes, how do you apply tziruf sal to things like a freezer? In other words, I gave you an example where I took 20 loaves of bread and I put them in a box. Okay, that's clear. I got to separate challah. What if I put my 20 loaves in my freezer? Do I look at the freezer as a kli that unifies all the bread? Is there a difference if they're wrapped separately, as they usually will be, in which case maybe they don't combine, or they're not wrapped and they're touching each other and the like? B'derech klal, on this issue, we are machmir in all the configurations, which means if you made bread or cake that was pachot mishir chala, and then they are brought together in the freezer or the light, at the point that you have in your freezer a critical mass from which challah has not been taken, there may be a tzirus in which you have to take off a piece. In other words, you take the 20 loaves, put them on the table, have them touch each other, and take off a piece and say, I'm ready to challah. So now this is a bit, I'll tell you where this is a problem. This is often a problem for shalach manas, right? People like, now again, if you're getting commercial shalach manas, you usually don't have to worry about it, because things under hashgacha made by factories, they took off challah. So once they took off challah, you know, the chiyuv doesn't happen again. But if you're getting homemade stuff, this is a real problem, because most homemade shalach manas is usually not made in a big enough quantity for challah, a cake, a cookie. On the other hand, if you get a lot of shalach manas that you throw into your refrigerator or freezer, etc., there may be a shayla of sirup. Sal, it's called Tzirav Sal, and then you're Mechayev, right? So this is a hidden halachic problem with Shalach Manas, besides the calories issue, and besides the fact that it's right before Pesach, who needs cookies and cake, you also have a potential challah issue that you need to be aware of. Yeah.
So then you have to take it with a bracha.
It would have to be with a bracha. If it's five pounds, you have to know. Yeah.
I have done this before where I forgot to take.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure why they told you it has to be so much. I don't know why it has to be one challah.
I think because it's impossible to measure
here.
Okay,
know. It sounds like a big chumrah. I mean, even if it's true, let me put it this way. I agree that you'd have to take a little bit more of baked bread than you would of dough, because the baked bread expands. But I don't see how it's going to be a whole challah. I would say, you know, take the end, break off the end of the challah. Yeah, yeah, I don't see any svara, unless the rabbi was trying to punish you or something for not taking the challah. But I don't see any reason why it would have to be a whole challah at that time. Huh? Yeah, one owner. Yeah, and now this raises an opposite question. Yeah, one owner. I'll illustrate this. Now, I want to give you an opposite question, where people, in other words, the first thing I told you was where people don't think you have to take up challah, and you do. Sirif Sal. I'll give you another case where there's a very serious shayla, whether you may should not take up challah, and people do. And that is, you know, it's very popular in Yerushalayim. They have very, very beautiful challah workshops. You know, there are tefillahs and tachinot. I'm not talking about that so much today, but, you know, very beautiful meditations on the mitzvah of challah, and it's a segula for all sorts of brachos and the like. So it's common in Beis Yaakov's other and for adult women also, where women get together and you have the teacher who like takes the dough, bakes, separates challah, and then gives some bread to everybody. Now, here is the following problem. The din that when I make an isa of whatever it is, the 2 kilos, I have to take off challah with a bracha, only applies if the whole isa belongs to one person. If the kavana is that we are going to divide this among separate people, even if we're going to do it after we bake it, or not after we bake, but after we make the dough, we then say, you take off challah, you take off challah, etc., the question becomes, unless each one has the requisite amount, you actually don't take off challah. Or if you do, you take it off without a bracha. So it's important to arrange these events so that you don't divide the isa to different people unless each one has a shiur. The fact that in the aggregate there's a shiur will not enable a bracha to be made if the kavana is to divide the dough among different participants. Yeah.
So, but I'm understanding this. This is my fault. I paid for this. For this flour, I gave for the ingredients,
yep.
I made the dough, I took the challah,
yep.
And now I want to make a gift to all my friends, but it's still, it's mine.
Right,
it's
the
like
problem, no, it is yours, but the question is, the way the Shulchan Aruch is worded is, if at the time, if at the time of the meeting,
yeah.
It was your kavana to divide the dough, not the finished bread, divide the dough among others. So there's a shiloh whether you became chayiv and chayiv.
Oh,
if you're going to give the bread to other people, that's just a gift of food. But if you're giving the dough, so they should also fulfill the mitzvah of challah, you have a problem.
Why
are
they giving the dough so they can have fun to bring it? I mean, I do that with my children.
Okay, when do you separate challah? Before you give it to them?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so that's different. Well, that's challah. Well, with children, that's just having fun. But what I'm saying is, in the challah workshops, it's so that everybody will separate challah.
Make their own.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah.
Well, no.
One person makes a brother. What I'm saying is, even that one person, I understand.
Sure,
but even that one person is a problem of making a brother.
They do that up on mitzvah. They do like they come to the mitzvah, they take it, and they give it to everybody, and they make their own.
Yeah. There's a problem with that. Okay.
But if you give out challah,
no, that's a gift. That's a gift. That's a gift.
If you're making challah with the five mitzvah girls is not in your private house, then whoever is making. Whoever made the dough, why
shouldn't
they take challah? One person at least
made it. Well, the problem is, yeah, I understand, but the problem basically is, if the dough is being made with the intention of dividing it up so that people will take off individual pieces of challah. What do they do at these workshops?
They take off, the dough's given out, they braid it, and
then they take it home.
Yes.
Okay, so even then, even if one person is taking off challah, if the kavana at the time of making the dough is that the dough is going to be mischalek before it's baked, there is an issue, which means ideally the way you get around it is you can give it to everybody to braid. One person takes up challah, everybody braids it, but then it should be baked. It should be baked in a single reshus as a single dough. Then you can divide the bread. They should not take the unbaked dough away because
they have to bake it there. They come out all in one shot.
Okay,
and they have a couple of times that they have to put it into the oven.
Well, okay, but as long as it's baked in the same oven.
The example you gave before.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
Different people I'm talking about.
One thing. So you're saying it's different people all together in the freezer.
Yeah.
That you got a lot and it's all together. But there's so many shilas. You're saying make the bracha even though there's so many shilas.
If there's any shiloh that maybe they took a challah, then of course you don't make a bracha. But what I'm saying is, even if there's a shiloh, you're mechuyev to take off challah without a bracha. But I was assuming that with cookies, it is very, very rare that at the time cookies are made, there was a sheer challah. So with cookies, we almost make an ironclad assumption that challah was not taken. That's our assumption. If that is assumption, when your cookies are a tzirif of the sheer challah, you actually take challah with the bracha. Now, if it's bread, then of course, it's very much the opposite. You would definitely not make a bracha because maybe there was a sheer challah. But unless you're mavayer as a matzav, you must take off without a bracha. So you are correct. I wasn't saying in every case you make a bracha, but I was saying, when you know there wasn't a sheir challah, and with cookies that's our assumption, you are mechuyev. And again, this is an important, this is a real shalach manas issue that people need to be aware of.
What if there's a sheir challah in addition to, let's say somebody did take challah, but you still take that piece out, you still have 2 kilo?
Oh, that's fine. If I make an isha of 10 kilo, you see, I mean, challah is only once from the dough. The fact that after I take off challah, I still have 9 kilo or 9.5 kilo is fine. I already took off challah.
No, I'm saying you got a gift if one person took challah, but nobody else did, but you have 2 kilo.
Counting that or not counting that?
Not counting that.
Then you got to take off challah from the new stuff.
All right.
Yeah. In other words, you don't count the stuff from which challah was taken, but you count the stuff from which challah wasn't taken.
So it could be that you have, even though it's not cooking, you still have to take all of it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Because if you and your neighbor put 6 hours in the freezer,
Yeah, you're pacha. If each of you retains your separate ownership, your project. It's only the title that belongs to one person.
And with your self money, your intention when you make the dough is to be metallic.
Yeah.
So how does that play out?
So this would be the exact shaila, that if you, but since by shalach manis, you're not going to give it till after it's baked,
mm-hmm.
so you would take off challah. In other words, it's only when you're giving it the isa that you don't. Okay, so I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, Rabbi.
Yeah.
You started to say earlier, but I was going to finish the sentence. If you take challah, but you shouldn't have.
No. Well, there's nothing.
What happens if you take challah and you shouldn't take it?
Well, intrinsically taking off challah, you don't have to take off. It's not an aveira.
No.
But the problem is, if you said a bracha, it's a bracha levatala. So there's no consequence other than bal kashrus maybe. There's no consequence to superfluous challah taking, but it's a bracha levatala. So that's why you need to be aware of these halachas. Okay, so I think that's kind of some basic stuff about challah to know about. And again, as I say, in Ruchnius and in Kabbalah, there was so much, such a beautiful, beautiful mitzvah. Again, I don't want to get to the issue of bakeries versus non-bakery. You know, it's an old, beautiful minhag Yisrael that if one is able to bake their own bread, number one, that intrinsically is honor of Shabbos. And number two, there's also the mitzvah of challah that one fulfills. In fact, Yerushalayim didn't even have, I think Angels or Berman's are the first bakery. Bakeries in Yerushalayim are only around 60 years old. There literally was no bakery in the whole city of Yerushalayim till 60 years ago, because it was unheard of that people didn't bake their own bread. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if a person wants to bake a braided loaf of bread for Shabbos, but doesn't want to use enough
to
take
challah
without a bracha, is it preferable really, like, not to bake
challah? No, I wouldn't say that, but there's two different inyanim here. See, two different inyanim. One is an inyan that it is kavod Shabbos to personally bake your own bread to Shabbos. Now that is true even if you're not going to take off challah, and there's no aveira that you're doing. I mean, if I bake less than a shir challah, I'm not doing a sin. I'm not doing an aveira. So I would still say there's a mitzvah to do it. There's an extra mitzvah, of course, if you want to be mekayim the mitzvah of challah as well. But one is not connected to the other. It is still covered Shabbos to bake your own bread in honor of Shabbos. Okay, the shaila is, how do you measure covered Shabbos if the bakery bread is better than the bread I bake? And the question is it more covered Shabbos to have a better bread, or is there an inyan of covered Shabbos in the personal effort you put in? So it may depend on your family dynamic, but it seems in halacha that the kavod of your personal involvement is machria, even the quality of the food, because you're honoring Shabbos by your willingness to personally do something in honor of Shabbos. Now you might argue, okay, so I'll cook it all. And one might say, okay, well, but why does the kavod have to be baking? So I'll buy the bread, and my kavod will be something else that I do. Okay, these are. Not so precious. The Mishnah Berurah says better to bake your own, but again, he doesn't explicitly deal with comparison baking. What if they're better than mine?
Mishnah Berurah says it's better to bake your own.
Yeah, he does. He does. But on the other hand, as they say, he doesn't deal with the question. I think he's presupposing homemade is better. He's not really dealing with the question that
assuming
I
assuming that homemade is better, but assuming you're having a lot of guests and so is it better to.
A human being cannot do everything. Even the proverbial Eishes Chayil, cannot. I know someone. I'm a modern person. She doesn't like Eishes Chayil. She doesn't let her husband sing Eishes Chayil because it makes her feel guilty. too many things. Yeah. But given the reality that we can't do everything, so there are shikulim here. For example, if I do, the woman does all the baking or cooking and that, she'll be exhausted. There won't be different Torah. She'll be angry with the children and her husband. So there are cheshbonos. That's why you make a cheshbon that disposable dishes. If that'll make the ruach a nicer ruach, so that might be a machriya. So you do have to have a sense of, everything is covered Shabbos, but what are the most important aspects, and you know, and those are going to be judgments. You know, those are going to be judgments that each family makes. Sometimes it is kedai to buy everything for Shabbos and use disposable dishes if the ruach is going to be one of shalom and Torah and better, you know, a nicer family atmosphere. You know, so those are all cheshbonos. That's also kavod Shabbos. Kavod Shabbos is there shouldn't be machlokas and short tempers and exhaustion. Okay, but in a perfect world, you know, you make your own bread. Yeah.
A white flour and braiding.
A white flour and braiding what? Yeah, they are. It's interesting how in the time of Chazal looked at whole wheat flour as a bit of inferior. It's interesting that the health considerations we have today are different. Rav Moshe writes that white flour is preferable to whole wheat, but again, as I say, that's not an absolute hakpada. Braiding is a heater because braiding, number one, has Kabbalistic significance, but also braiding makes it look prettier and nicer, and that's also part of the heater, that even the physical appearance of the bread you eat on Shabbos should look more elegant than the bread you eat during the week. That's a heater as well. So maybe we'll have to hold off a near Shabbos.
Right, we'll do that. Next week, but we'll send out something. We'll see.
Is your personal preference would be that Kiddur would be whole wheat rather than white?
I think that's fine. In many, many ways, this is totally on a person's own taste as well. It's in what's called a heater. It's not an absolutely objective test.
Because back then, white flour was a lot
healthier.
In the time
of Chazal, white flour was considered to be better.
It was just not made the way it is now.
Yeah.
This is, for example, something where you can say, well, that was for his time, but that he didn't know.
You know, it's tricky because I know that you don't want to go into the attitude, he didn't know about it.
Yeah.
And I understand that it's a little tricky when you do this in halacha, when you don't.
Yeah.
But usually when it comes to things like defining aesthetics, you do have a certain amount of license to do that, in terms of standards of culture and the like. It wouldn't apply to the more objective areas of tzfak halacha, but in these areas, there's room for individuality. it's a tricky question. Okay, be well. So next time we'll do near Shabbat.
Yeah.
Okay.
You guys have a question.
Yeah,
question. Grape juice. I want to make an ice pop on Shabbat for added grape juice. Two questions. Number one, I want to know what the bracha changes to that. Oh, number one. Number two, can you do it? Because it's something that you're using in a special way, and does that minimize the grape juice used to
hit it.
And now I
want to
make it as a dessert, an ice pop to my children. What is
this about? You can make an ice pop,
although
on Shabbos.
Not on Shabbos. For sure, I don't think I can.
Yeah. But the fact that it's not called lowering.
It's not called lowering. And what would you do about that? Don't make sure that then? I add a little water to it.
The bracha should still be very
good. Okay, thanks. Great. Okay, good.